and thank you for being here. I will present our work on GitHub materials, and the work was done with Yingchen, the same Yingchen, and the talk will be based on this paper. Okay, let me start by telling you about our motivations. We would like to explore exotic quantum phases and phase transitions. After having some theoretical understanding of some of the exotic phases and phase transitions, we would also like to ask whether the interesting physics there can be realized in any real materials. Because many of the interesting phases and phase transitions we propose will be described by some 2 plus 1 Strong coupler theory, which are themselves not even theoretically well understood. So if they can be realized in some real materials, we may get more insights. This is my outline. I will first give an introduction to the background. Then I will tell you about the field-induced neutral Fermi surfaces and the QCD3 transforms quantum criticalities. Just to put the talk into a bigger scope, let me start by reviewing the basics of traditional condensed matter physics. So in the conventional wisdom, quantum phases are often distinguished by their patterns of spontaneous symmetry breaking, and the low-lying excitations in the conventional phase can often be well understood in terms of non-lived quasi-particles. And the phase transitions between conventional phases can often be formulated in terms of some fluctuating local order parameters. A prototypical example of conventional phases is this antiferro magnet. Its pattern of spontaneous symmetry breaking is such that the spin rotation symmetry, translation symmetry, time reversal, and so on are broken. And the low-line excitations in this system are magnons, which are well-defined quasi-particles. We can also understand the phase transition between a pyromagnet and an antiferro magnet by thinking about the near order parameter. Okay, but over the last many years, there are also many scenarios beyond the conventional paradigm that have been discovered. A prominent one is the so-called quantum spin liquid. So a quantum spin liquid is a spin system with non-trivial pattern of entanglement in the ground state. They are non-trivial, but they are not necessarily associated with any spontaneous symmetry breaking. Broadly speaking, there are two types of quantum spin liquids. One is gapped, the other is gapless. In a gapped quantum spin liquid, there's a gap that separates the ground states from the excited states, so the dynamics of the system is relatively simpler. The low-lying excitations in a gapped quantum spin liquid is also well-defined quasi-particles, but they are different from the conventional system in the sense that they are anions. They don't have to be bosons. They can be something that carries anionic statistics. The gapped quantum spin liquids are also called bosonic topological order. There's another type of quantum spin liquid, which is gapless, whose dynamics is more complicated. It turns out there are also two cases for a gapless quantum spin liquid. Either the low-line excitations can be viewed as well-defined quasi-particles, but still non-local ones, or there's just no well-defined quasi-particle at all. The second case is very complicated, and it requires much more exploration. In this talk, you will hear examples of all these types of quantum spin liquids. And let me give a few examples. The first is this two-dimensional gapped Z2 quantum spin liquid. There are three types of non-trivial excitations in the system, usually called M, epsilon, and the bound state of M and epsilon. Both M and epsilon are non-local excitations. Only if we put two of them together, we get something like a spin flip, a local excitation. Epsilon itself is a fermion. If we exchange the positions of two epsilons, we get a minus one. And there's also non-trivial statistics between M and epsilon. If I fix the position of M and move epsilon around it, I also get a minus one. You may notice this state is in a way very similar to an ordinary superconductor in the sense that epsilon is like the electron, M is like the pi flux. But there's also a crucial difference, that is M and epsilon are emergent excitations here. Okay, this is one example. The other example is also a gapped quantum spin liquid, which we will call isotopological order, ITO for short. In this state, there are two types of non-trivial excitations. One is the epsilon, the same epsilon as before. Two of them together is a local excitation. Each one is a fermion. And there's also the sigma, which is the so-called non-abelian anion. It has some internal degrees of freedom. Depending on the internal degrees of freedom, when we put two sigma excitations together, we may either get a local excitation or this epsilon. And also, if we exchange the positions of two sigma excitations, depending on the internal degrees of freedom, we will either get this phase factor or the other. And then also, there's a minus one breeding between sigma and epsilon. So this state is, in a sense, very similar to a P plus IP superconductor. So epsilon is like the electrons. Sigma is like the pi flux in the P plus IP superconductor. And in the P plus IP superconductor, there's a chiral edge state, and there's quantized thermal Hall effect. Here, the same in the ITO state, there's a chiral edge state and a quantized thermal Hall effect. This quantized thermal Hall effect will be a useful way to detect this quantum spin liquid. OK, the next example is a gapless spin liquid. It has a neutral Fermi surface, and so let me call it NFS. So the way to think about this state is to notice we start from a spin system, so everything is neutral. We have neutral excitations such as the spin flips, then the neutral local excitations. Those local excitations can split into two fermions, which are called F, also known as spinons. The spinons can form a Fermi surface. That's our spinon Fermi surface. This state is also, in a sense, similar to a Fermi liquid, because in a Fermi liquid, there's a Fermi surface of electrons, and here there's a Fermi surface of the F spinons. There are some key differences. One is F is neutral here, neutral under the usual electromagnetic field, but it interacts with a 2 plus 1 emergent U1 gauge field. Yeah.
So the F charge, is it charged under the U1 of the emergent gauge field? But not charged with the global U1 from, say, Maxwell's field.
Yeah. Just because it's a spin system, the spins are not charged under the usual global U1. And because of this strong coupling between the Fermi surface of F and the U1 gauge field, in this system, there's no well-defined quasi particle. Another property is a usual Fermi liquid is unstable against the weak attracting interaction. But this state is believed to be stable against the weak attractive interaction. So this is a very strange and interesting state. It's gapless with no quasi particle, but it's believed to be stable, and the stability doesn't rely on any protection from any symmetry. Yeah.
So are these statements independent of dimensionality, or it's?
The last one, I think the last one in 3D, there's a, I'm not entirely sure. There's a regime where it may be unstable to pairing, but there's also must be a regime where it is stable.
And the last statement, for example, was obtained in some large N expansion. Or?
In 3D, you mean in 2D, it can be obtained through the double expansion developed by David and Santel. But the physical picture is simple, just because of the ampere interaction that is repulsive. Okay. Okay, this is an example of a gapless quantum spin liquid. So I just gave you three examples of quantum spin liquids, but only one example of a conventional phase. I try to give you the impression that there are more quantum spin liquids than conventional phases. You know this is not true. A quantum spin liquid is actually very elusive experimentally. There are basically two reasons for the difficulty to detect a quantum spin liquid. The first one is to realize a quantum spin liquid, we often require not only a strong, but a specific structure of the interaction in the system. And the second reason is even if a quantum spin liquid is realized in some real material, it's usually hard to find a smoking gun signature to detect it. For these reasons, it will be important to build up and realize more realistic models for a quantum spin liquid, and it's also important to develop some new way to detect them. So among the models for a quantum spin liquid, this Kitaev model is a very is a very prominent one that many people are interested. So this model is defined on a honeycomb lattice. On each side, there's a spin 1/2. It has this bond dependent coupling. For example, for the blue bonds, the spins are only coupled through SCSC. For green bonds, they're only coupled through SYSY. And for red bonds, they're only coupled through SXSX. The Hamiltonian is written here. You're also free to add an external magnetic field, so the total Hamiltonian looks like this. Depending on the parameters of this Hamiltonian, this model can realize many phases people already know. For example, if there's no external magnetic field, the phase diagram roughly looks like this. You have a region, depending on the relative strength of the Kitaev couplings, you have a region for the Z2 quantum spin liquid I just mentioned, and there's another region for a gapless quantum spin liquid. This gapless quantum spin liquid can be viewed as two massless Majorana cones coupled to a dynamical Z2 gauge field. Kitaev told us if we now switch from here, if we now switch on a small magnetic field, the Majorana cones will open a gap, and what we will obtain is precisely this Eisen topological order. And we further know if we add a super strong magnetic field, the system will just be trivially polarized. So in this model, at least we can realize many, many phases. Now you may wonder, this model looks so strange. It may never have any chance to be realized in any real material. But impressively, due to some observations from these two gentlemen, people realized in systems with strong spin orbital coupling, some variants of the Kitaev models can be realized. For example, in these materials, which are quasi-2D layered materials, each layer of them is a honeycomb lattice, and due to the strong spin orbital coupling, they can realize some variants of the Kitaev model. Since this observation, searching for Kitaev spin liquids in Kitaev materials becomes a very active field, and you can find some reviews from these papers. Okay, among the Kitaev materials, this alpha ruthenium tricholoid is a very popular one. So people know if we cool down the temperature of this state, if we don't do anything else, the state actually orders into this so-called zigzag pattern, namely the spin moments on this side point to one direction, and on this side point to the other direction, and then it repeats and repeats. However, if we add a strong magnetic field, it will be trivially polarized. But interestingly, in the intermediate range of the magnetic field, people found something different. In particular, in this experimental report, they found in some range of the magnetic field and temperature, the system shows a quantized thermal Hall effect, and the quantization value is precisely what's predicted for an Eisen topological order. So although this experiment still has to be reproduced, and there's also some subtlety in interpreting the experimental results, all these findings give us some more confidence that an Eisen topological order may indeed be realized in one or more of the Kitaev materials. And we will take this optimistic point of view and assume in some of the Kitaev materials, for example, this one, an Eisen topological order is realized. Then some interesting questions immediately arise. The first one is we can ask to go from the Eisen topological order to the polarized state. Is the transition direct or is there any intermediate phase? The second question is we know we can go from Eisen topological order to the zigzag by decreasing the magnetic field. And we can ask, what's the critical theory that describes this critical point? Okay, these will be the questions that I want to address in this talk. But before that, let me spend 1 minute to talk about quantum phase transitions in general. That is, why do we care about quantum phase transitions? After all, we have so many interesting quantum phases, and they occupy most of the regions of the phase diagram. Phase transition is just some major zero set of phase boundary. Why do we care? We care for different reasons. First, if a phase transition is continuous, then it may be described by some rather interesting universality class, so it's interesting on its own. Second, if we want to understand the quantum phase transition, it requires us to understand the intricate interplay among all moving parts of the system. Then doing so enables us to have a unified understanding, not only of the phase transition, but of the nearby phases, and also including the crossovers, just as what Chung talked about a few days ago. Okay, now let me go to the second part, the neutral Fermi surface. So here we want to address the first question. Is the transition between the Ising topological order and the trivial state direct, or is there any intermediate phase? To address this question, we will study it numerically. We will study this model here. This model is an anti-ferromagnetic K-type model, anti-ferromagnetic isotropic K-type model with a magnetic field pointing to the most symmetric direction of the system. It has a bunch of symmetries. There's some general expectations of this model. When Gitaev already told us, when the magnetic field is small, this model will realize the Ising topological order. And we don't require Gitaev to tell us. We know when the magnetic field is very large, we will just have a trivial polarized state. But what's the evolution from one to the other? That's what we want to explore. So we performed the DMRG calculation. We put the system onto a cylinder, and here I'm showing you, in this figure, I'm showing you the correlation length of the system as a function of the magnetic field for two different bound dimensions. So bound dimension is something that characterizes how much entanglement this DMRG calculation can handle. With a larger bound dimension, we have a better approximation of the ground state. Here you can see when the magnetic field is either quite weak or quite strong, the correlation length is independent of the bound dimension. This is to say if we have a better ground state wave function, the correlation length is just not changing. So this is consistent with a gapped phase, and it also, which has a finite correlation length. This also agrees with our expectations that here and here we should have a gapped Ising topological order or just a gapped trivial state. But interestingly, in the middle, we can see if we increase the bound dimension, the correlation length increases a lot. This is to say if we have a better approximation of the ground state, we have a better, we have a larger correlation length, and it just keeps increasing. This is a signature of a gapless phase in this DMRG calculation. Now, knowing that there is an interesting gapless phase in the middle, in the middle region of the magnetic field, we would like to understand what is the nature of this gapless phase. So we studied this spin-spin correlation function or spin structure factor shown here. You see there are various of singularities in the structure factor, and when you change the magnetic field, the momenta at which you see the singularities will also change with the magnetic field. This mimics the 2KF singularities of a Fermi surface, and it leads us to conclude this gapless phase is actually the neutral Fermi surface state. We also did many other studies of this phase, but due to the limit of time, let me just talk about this much about this part. Okay, so what do we know now is that at least within this model, between the Ising topological order and the polarized state, there's a neutral Fermi surface state. We would also like to understand, we would also like to have a unified understanding of different phases. Namely, we want to ask what is the transition here and what is the transition here. This is not too hard to understand. For example, if I view the neutral Fermi surface as a parent state, then by increasing the magnetic field, I can shrink the Fermi surface and make it disappear. Then what I will have is just a 2+1D compact U1 gauge field that will confine, and then I may end up with a trivial state. On the other hand, to get to the...
You have some intuition on why the neutral Fermi surfaces are showing up here?
Not really.
Does anybody have such intuition?
There's some part on mean field. I don't know if you count that as intuition.
No, the Hubbard model, there's some intuition, right? If it shows up.
In this example, there's no that kind of intuition.
So you don't have some.
Yeah.
You show the spin structure factor had some peaks at pi over 2, right? You say it mimics the 2KF. Similarities, and that's the reason why you think there's a Fermi surface. Is that enough to say that there is an underlying Fermi surface, or is it just biased by the part on construction? Is there, let me phrase it different, is there any other like smoking gun signature that you can see that implies there is a Fermi surface of this, I guess, part on Fermi?
This is a good question. I think this is a pretty strong evidence. You can think in 2 plus 1D, what kind of a gapless spin equid you can have. You just list the things that people have already understood. You know, in this system, there's some symmetries. If you one scenario is to have something like the Dirac spin equid chain studied, but then the rotation symmetries will fix the gapless points at some particular momenta. It shouldn't change as a magnetic field. So it's not like that scenario, so it's more possible there's an extended area of gapless region. Okay, to understand the transition from a neutral Fermi surface to Eisen topological order, we can just pair up the spinons and condense the Cooper pairs. Then we can gap out the Fermi surface and get the Eisen topological order. So we can understand these two transitions. By the way, this transition was actually already studied by David and Santo and others. So yeah.
Didn't you say that, just before a few slides, didn't you say that neutral Fermi surface is stable under pairing?
Yeah. There's a range of parameter space in which it's stable. But if you go out of that range, it can be unstable.
So it's, the way to show it is some diagram calculation, RG? Or?
More or less, and the people who did it was sitting right behind, right beside you.
So the Lipschitz is, so it's Lipschitz plus a Yuan gauge field. Do people know that little behavior of that?
I'm working on it now.
Oh, okay.
Is it clear that there is a direct transition to the zigzag phase? Shouldn't it be through the Z2 topological order?
I will tell you. That's the maybe the more interesting part. Mm-hmm. So, but before, okay.
Actually, is there a lattice model which gives you the transition between the zigzag and the
EC? Yes, and I will tell you. But what do you mean by lattice model?
I mean,
spin model or?
Some spin model where you do a numerical calculation, you observe this continuous transition.
No.
I think there are some like ED calculations.
ED calculations?
Yeah. Basically, find like zigzag and isotope order. Same there, it's a direct transition.
Okay.
No, it's a ED, so
yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. But I will give you some lattice gauge theory models.
Oh.
Okay. Before doing the next, maybe more interesting part, let's pause for a moment to summarize where we are and where to go. So we said in this key type material, we already know there are three phases, and we showed in one simplified model, there can be this neutral Fermi surface state in the middle, and we can understand the transitions out from the neutral Fermi surface to the nearby phases. There's still one question mark in the phase diagram that Ehud asked. What is this transition? Can there be a direct transition, or do I have to go through some intermediate phase between these two? This is the next part. So we want to ask whether there can be a critical theory between the Eisen topological order and the zigzag phase. This leads me to the third part, QCD switch and Simons quantum criticalities. Okay, so our goal is to construct a critical theory. Before doing that, let me summarize what's the game here. So to construct such a critical theory, we need to pay attention to at least three aspects. The first one is this topological aspect. We know in the Eisen topological order, there are some anions, sigma and epsilon. We would like to remove the topological order. After removing the topological order, we will have some short-range entangled state. But at that moment, we may not know the symmetry pattern of the short-range entangled state. So we also want to obtain the correct symmetries of the short-range entangled state so that it matches the zigzag phase. Furthermore, doing these two, we will have a theory. If we can do these two, we will have a theory that can potentially describe a direct transition between zigzag and the Eisen topological order, but we don't know whether it's really a continuous transition. So we would like to examine the existence of relevant perturbations other than the tuning parameter. This is the dynamical aspect. I will address all these aspects in the following. This is hard, and this may be why you would ask. It's very hard. Let's first ask about the topological aspect. How do we remove the asymptological order? This is already non-trivial, because the usual strategy to remove an asymptological order, to remove any topological order, is to do the so-called anion condensation. I believe Yuanming will talk about that in the afternoon. The way to do it is to pick up some bosonic anion in the system that has some proper statistics with other anions. Once you condense this bosonic anion, you can find all other anions. But this doesn't work here, simply because there's no bosonic anion to condense in this topological order. So our strategy to get around this is to find some proper dual descriptions of the phases we want to study. And to do this, we will rely on a very deep mathematical identity. You know, the deepest mathematical identity is e to the I pi plus 1 is equal to 0. We will not use that one. We will use 1 is equal to 3 plus negative 2. I guess this is also deep enough. Let me explain what I mean. I mentioned earlier, asymptological order is very similar to a P plus IP superconductor. Let me elaborate on that. So a P plus IP superconductor is a two-dimensional topological superconductor that only has a fermion parity symmetry. Two-dimensional topological superconductors with this symmetry have been classified by Kitaev in the same paper. That's the famous 16-fold way. The P plus IP state is the so-called nu equal to 1 state. So in the 16-fold way, each state is enabled by an integer nu. Another point of view to understand this nu equal to 1 state is to first consider nu equal to 3 state, and then bring another nu equal to minus 2 state. Now I switch on some hybridization between the electrons in these two superconductors, I will obtain the nu equal to 1 state. Okay, now Kitaev also told us if we gauge the fermion parity symmetry of the nu equal to 1 state, I will get the asymptological order. Now let me do the same thing on the other side of this equation 1 is equal to 3 plus negative 2. When I gauge the fermion parity symmetry of the nu equal to 3 state, it's known that we will get the so-called SU2 level 2 state. And if we gauge the fermion parity symmetry of the nu equal to minus 2 state, it's also known that we will get the so-called U1 level minus 4 state. These are two topological orders where there's a fermionic anion and some other anions. Basically, that's what you need to know about these topological orders. Then the hybridization between the electrons in these two superconductors translates into the hybridization between the fermionic anions in these two topological orders. So this argument tells us there's a description of the asymptological order in terms of this transform field theory, that is SU2 level 2 cross U1 level minus 4 mod Z2. This modding of Z2, the physical meaning of this modding of Z2 is precisely this hybridization. This relation has been noticed in the previous literature as well, but it's explained in a more abstract way. But the real physics is just this.
Is this Z2 a subgroup of the true gauge group, so is it more general symmetry?
This Z2 is the center of SU2 and the pi of U1. OK. Then this relation enables us to write down a field theory Lagrangian to describe the asymptological order. So the Lagrangian looks like this. It has a Chern-Simons term of the SU2 and the U1 gauge field. Of course, it also has some Maxwell-Young-Mills terms. So the more important one is the Chern-Simons term here. And it's the gauge fields are coupled to a boson called phi through some minimal coupling shown here. Now, if we make the boson phi gapped, we know we will precisely have the Chern-Simons description of the asymptological order. That's good. We want to have it. Furthermore, we can play the usual game by condensing phi. If we condense phi due to the Higgs effect, it turns out the resulting state is a short-range entangled state. This is to say this field theory Lagrangian is able to describe the confinement transition of asymptological order directly. But at the moment, we still don't know what is the nature of this short-range entangled state, in particular, whether it's zigzag or something else, like the nil state. So to answer this question, we need to pay attention to the symmetry aspect. More precisely, we need to make sure the microscopic symmetries in this system eventually matches the remaining symmetries matches the remaining symmetry of zigzag. So let's look at the microscopic symmetries. There are some lattice symmetries and maybe with some combinations of spin rotations. These are the microscopic symmetries. But the field theory Lagrangian can have a much larger symmetry. As a field theory, it has a Poincaré symmetry, CPT, and there's a U1 flux conservation because there's a U1 gauge field. And if we have multiple NF flavors of bosons, there can be SUNF flavor symmetry. The relation between the microscopic symmetries and the field theory symmetry is that the microscopic symmetries must be embedded into the full symmetry, full emergent symmetries of the field theory. To understand the symmetry aspect, to understand the symmetry of the resulting short-range entangled state, we have to understand what is this embedding pattern. But this embedding pattern depends on the microscopic details, just as Chung talked about. So to understand this embedding pattern, we want a concrete construction with a targeted field theory emergent at low energies. And to do this, we will perform one more duality transformation to get a theory that is a U2 gauge field coupled to. I have 10 more minutes, right? coupled to some fermions. So previously we have a U2 gauge field coupled to some bosons. Now we want to convert it to a theory of U2 gauge fields coupled to fermions. You may wonder why do we want to do it? Because usually it's easier to handle bosons than handling fermions. Why do we want to do this conversion? The reason is now we want to have a very concrete construction so that the field theory will emerge. And the purpose of doing this is to understand the symmetry actions at low energies. But to do this, we need to put the bosonic matter or fermionic matter into a certain state. With bosons, at least at the mean field level, we can only condense it or just make them disappear. There's not much freedom, no choice. But with fermions, we have more flexible mean field ansatzes. In particular, we can put fermions into all kinds of topological bands. And then, depending on which topological band we put them in, after considering the coupling between the fermions and the gauge field, we will get different topological states. So this is why we want to convert the bosonic theory to the fermionic theory. Then we just do it. We apply some generalized level rank duality and obtain this Lagrangian, which describes some U2 gauge field coupled to some Dirac fermions and with a bunch of other stuff. Maybe I should also, because of the presence of a string theorist here, I should also mention this U2 gauge field is not that ordinary. Maybe it should be called, I don't know its name.
Okay,
spin U2. It looks complicated, but don't be scared because there's a simpler way to understand it is to understand it through this pattern construction. Namely, we write down the spin rising operator S plus as a product of four fermionic operators C1 dagger, C2 dagger, F1 dagger, F2 dagger. This pattern construction, these types of pattern construction have been talked about many times in this conference. This one, experts may know it has a very large gauge redundancy. But for our purpose, we will break the gauge redundancy into an SU2 such that F1 and F2 form a doublet, a U1 such that C1 and C2 carry opposite charges, and another U1 that glues together Cs and Fs. Then I can put the C's and F's into very concrete mean field Hamiltonians. In particular, we will put them into some chain bands with certain chain numbers. We will always put C's into a chain band with chain number equal to -1, and we will choose the chain number of the F to be either 2, 1, or 0. You can make other choices, but for our purpose, we will just choose this. It turns out, if we choose the chain number for the F to be 2, the topological state we obtain after considering the coupling between the fermions and the gauge field is just isentopological order. Interestingly, if we choose the chain number to be either 1 or 0, we will always get a short-range entangled state. Now, because we have concrete Hamiltonians, we can study the symmetry actions. And we found when the chain number is 1, the symmetry actions of the short-range entangled state matches the zigzag phase. And when the true number is zero, it matches a trivial polarized state.
You say true number is the same as the sign of the mass?
Sorry?
You say true number is the same as the sign of the mass?
It's the same as the sign of the mass up to a regularization. So this tells us if we want to have a critical theory between asymptotological order and the zigzag, all we need to do is to change the true number of f from 2 to 1. And this, in the previous Lagrangian, is described by one flavor of Dirac fermion coupled to the spin U2 connection. But as a bonus, from here we also know if we want to understand a direct transition from asymptotological order to a trivially polarized state, we just have to change the true number of f from 2 to 0. And this is described by two flavors of Dirac fermions coupled to the U2 gauge field. Okay, so.
Is there a symmetry that guarantees you can change? Symmetry?
Yeah, that's the. I will talk about that as well.
Is it important to have an explicit like C1 dagger, C2 dagger? Because it seems like C1, C2 doesn't change through the transition. So can you just replace it by this boson?
In terms of critical theory, it's not that important. But in terms of the phases, if you want to obtain the right phases, it's important. Or in other way to say it, you have some IR field theory, but there are many ways of completing the indoor UV. Depending on the different UV completions, you have different UV theories.
If you replace C1 dagger, C2 dagger by some boson, you cannot produce.
I also can, but if I want to make sure what the symmetry action is, I want everything to be fermionic because then I can make the fermions into some free fermion band structure.
When an f equals to 2, are you avoiding going through the intermediate phase of the neutral fermion surface when going from the ITO to the polarized state?
Yes.
So which one is the right description? Is there a direct transition between the ITO phase and the polarized phase, or there's the transition that you described before?
And there are two scenarios.
Okay.
And I will summarize that later. Okay, so here what we know is we can have some critical theory that potentially describes a direct transition between ITO and zigzag and ITO and polarized state. But as many of you have already asked, can we guarantee this transition is continuous? Namely, are there other relevant perturbations than the tuning parameter? So this is the dynamical aspect. We cannot settle it down completely, but we will do our best. We write down the most relevant most obvious relevant perturbations, including some of the fermion bilinears that Chung worried about, and some monopole operators, and some other perturbations. And interestingly, just using the microscopic symmetries of the real material, they're all forbidden. So this tells us maybe it's possible in the real material to realize this phase transition, which are very exotic. Yeah.
So I guess you mean they're relevant to the UV fixed point.
They are relevant in the UV fixed point, and we suspect that they are the most relevant ones in the IR as well. That's the best we can do in this time frame. Okay. Now let me summarize. And first, let me go back to the main questions. We want to ask whether the transition between asymptotological order and the trivial state is direct, or is there any intermediate phase? Second, what is the critical theory here? So we found two scenarios. So one is, in one scenario, we can go through a neutral fermion surface, and and these two transitions can also be understood. In the other scenario, we can go from the asymptotological order to the trivial state directly, and the transition is potentially described by this QCD3 chain sum theory. And the transition between asymptotological order and the zigzag can also be potentially direct, and is described by this QCD3 chain sum, another QCD3 chain sum theory. Okay. Open questions. There are many open questions. For example, in the real material, how do I detect the neutral fermion surface state? And also, in the part of a neutral fermion surface, we studied a very simplified model. It's good to study more realistic models. And also, it's good to do more numerical and analytical studies of the field theories. Furthermore, another interesting theoretical question is whether we can, just as what Chung and Yin-Chen did, whether we can find a grand a multi-critical point upon adding perturbation, it can become the phases and phase transitions we propose. Then if we can, this is a grand unification theory of the quantum magnetism in the K-type materials. Yes, it may also be interesting to ask what are the other platforms to implement the interesting physics here. With this, I would like to thank you.
There's some extra symmetry at the this IDU to zigzag transition that you can see based on dualities.
No. You're asking if there's any symmetry that cannot be seen from the Lagrangian, but I have to see it from duality? No. At least we didn't see it.
But are there symmetries that you can see, say, in the fermion formulation or something?
Not more symmetries. They're all in the Lagrangian. The symmetries in one Lagrangian of the duality is the same as the symmetry of the other.
But is there enhanced symmetry compared to the microscopic?
No.
Okay. Are there some
continuous flavor rotations? In both sides, there are flavor rotations.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you're asking.
So there were two questions, but that was part of the question. So that could then lead to, like in 2D3 or something, lead to, if this theory is right, some prediction for unexpected equality of correlation functions.
Yeah, that can. We actually have some prediction for some of the experimental observables. Yeah.
One last thing. The simulation that you showed for the spin structure factor that had this 2KF peaks. How would that fit in the second scenario that you're presenting?
Second scenario means QCD 3 transmons?
Yeah.
It will not.
It will not.
It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
So having that QCD transmons just means you can, in principle, design a model that realizes it. But that model may not be the model we studied.
Okay.
Let's next speaker again.